Just waiting for confirmation.
Make sure. Do you want me looking at this, or do you want me looking at you? Or
you can look wherever you want, my friend.
Okay.
I mean, if you want to be like, I got a message for the haters. You know, you can look at the camera. Looks like Kara joined. So how are we doing on audio and everything, Kara? How are we sounding good? There's Dustin Rhodes. This is my boy, Dustin, black belt from Connecticut. Bad mofo. All right. So it looks like we're good. We have audio. We have video. I have with me today Mr. Charles Gates. He goes by CJ. He's a white belt at Gracie Bradenton. And I wanted to chat with him a little bit today and learn about his story because I think it's quite interesting. So I'm going to go ahead and let you introduce yourself and talk about what division of the military you were in and, you know, where you were stationed. I guess we can start there, yeah?
Okay. So as you said, my name's CJ. So I was in the military for approximately 12 years in the Army, active Army. While serving in the U.S. Army, I was stationed in primarily two units, which is 25th ID, which is out of Hawaii, and then the 82nd Airborne, which is up in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. I deployed three times with the military, all with Hawaii, or the 25th ID. My first two deployments were to Iraq, my third to Afghanistan, for a total of 39 months combined.
So each deployment was 39 months long?
No, so my first one was 15 months
in Iraq,
and I came back for about a year. This is about the Iraq surge time period
with George
Bush. Then I went back to Iraq to Samara for another additional 12 months after like a 12-month break.
Right.
And then one more year off, or back in Hawaii, and then I went to RCE, Afghanistan.
Okay. So out of the two countries, and I know this might seem like an odd question, but which one did you enjoy? I mean, could you enjoy being in either one, but did you prefer one country over the other? I mean, do they look the same? Or are they different?
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, they're exponentially different multiple ways. So I prefer Afghanistan for multiple reasons. We always had kind of like a running joke around the platoon or whatever, and the teams was that, you know, if these guys didn't want to kill us or hurt us in some way, shape, fashion, I would vacation here in Afghanistan.
they could turn it into a giant Taurus.
Yeah, I swear, like, it was gorgeous. I mean, land is right on the Pakistan border, mountains everywhere, like snow-capped mountains, river valleys, like with a river running through it. It's gorgeous, like absolutely gorgeous.
Other than the fact that people are like trying to kill you, it's a very nice place.
Yeah, I mean, there's good people there too, you know.
Of course, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's obviously.
But that's not why you were there.
Yeah, exactly.
You weren't there for the good people.
I wasn't there to meet those guys. Yeah, I was there for the other ones. But yeah, in Iraq, I honestly, it was a shithole. I don't know if I can say that. But
you can say whatever you want, man.
It was Kirk Cook was like more of a city, but it was just really crappy. The fighters there, like they were a lot different than what I dealt with in Afghanistan as far as...
How so? Like, I feel like, and I could be totally way off base here, but, you know, based on what I think I know, it seems like people in Afghanistan have been fighting wars for years. I mean, they fought the Russians back in, you know, what was it, the 80s or something?
And, yeah.
And they've just been fighting and fighting and fighting. We'll just tap yourself. Get back in focus. Okay. There you go. Just move around a little all bit. Right. If you're out of focus, it'll come back in.
All right,
but yeah, the Afghanistans have been fighting wars for years, whereas Iraq, it seems like, you know, you've got all these people that have congregated together that just want to fight the man.
Yeah.
And they have no training and no real sense of loyalty to the country. So it's going to be kind of a shit show. That seems like – that's my impression as a civilian.
It's pretty spot on, honestly. Afghanistan or, you know, insurgents in Afghanistan – they were extremely well-trained. I've seen dudes doing American tactics against Americans as far as like...
Really?
Yeah, as far as like, you know, 3 to 5 second rushes, which is like a movement technique under fire. Like we're firing at these dudes or whatever and with fire superiority and like is controlling these dudes, but they're still assaulting the objective, assaulting the objective, And I mean, there's like nonstop push. Iraq.
And that's not something you're used to in Iraq.
No, not at all. Iraqis, I mean, and to their credit, is probably smarter in a lot of ways. Because I mean, I've always thought with Afghanis, it's like respectable in the sense like how they fought, but at the same time, they're going against, for the most times, overwhelming firepower.
Yeah.
So it's definitely kind of crazy to think about. These guys are like believing that call so much that they're assaulting or really dumb, one of the two, but they're assaulting a machine gun position with rotor wing overhead or fixed wing overhead, and they know what happens when those.
And then there's drones. I mean, I've seen these videos on YouTube where you got these snipers that are trying to take pot shots at the military, and it's like, yeah, okay, yeah, call it in, and the next thing you know, like a drone comes by or a an A-10 comes by or something, and just destroys the whole area where the fire was coming from. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how do they not know that we have those capabilities?
Yeah, I mean, it's not that they don't know. These guys have been fighting us for a long time, just like you're saying, and it's not like CCA or rotor wing is like a new thing, or like drones are a newer kind of, but air support is not necessarily new. Like the Russians had it, and they're used to fighting like that, and it's their backyard. Like those guys can hide well. And luckily for us, I mean, a lot of the, not to get too much into, but a lot of the platforms, like the fixed wing and CCA, the rotor wings that they have, I mean, those guys spot heat signatures, and they can see what I couldn't see, or
they get that like predator vision from the movie Predator,
guy. Three different types of scans or whatever. but yeah, like in Iraq, they were way more like guerrilla warfare tactics. So they would a lot more IEDs, a lot more VBEZ, or like vehicle borne IEDs, which is smart, because
what's a vehicle horn IED?
Vehicle borne IED is like just pretty much an IED is like, an IED is,
right?
Outside of the road, right? A vehicle borne IED is just, it's in a vehicle, so they load it down with like way more. They can load it down with way more because they're not concealing it like under the earth or whatever, in a culvert. And
it's like a Bugs Bunny cartoon. They just throw a bunch of dynamite into a car and then drive it.
Or they could leave it next to a route that they know Americans travel every day, and then they wait for that lucky one.
Now, is that how you got injured?
No. So, I mean, I've been in quite a few IEDs, never injured to the point where it was a big deal. A lot of people were, obviously, my first deployment, IEDs were huge. A lot of guys were, this is when EFPs or explosive form projectiles were coming in. So it was really nasty stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was taking guys' legs with it and a lot of bad stuff. But no, I actually got injured in Afghanistan through one of the firefights that we got in. And two, it was actually from the concussion of our own munition. So we...
Really?
Yeah, so there's... We were dropping 500-pound bombs on these guys that were assaulting into our position, and it was danger close. It was just a wild time. And these guys, I think they wanted the reason they were so ballsy with us was because coming within like 35 to 50 meters, 100 meters of us, because there was a Chinook that went down. So they really wanted that for propaganda reasons. And I got a bad TBI there. It was a long mission. It was a 6-day mission out in Afghanistan, RC East, in a valley called Waterpur, or a district called Waterpur. Like, really crazy dudes there. Like, really, like I was kind of saying, that's where I saw the guy 3 to 5 second rushing with us into machine gun positions. And, I mean, just very well trained. And, I mean, they're not, it's not like the movies that you see the guys, shooting over their heads or whatever with AKs. Like, the guys are trained to at least an extent with marksmanship and tactics, so, come across from Pakistan or whatever.
So when you say you were injured by your own munitions, mm-hmm. what exactly does that mean? So you went to...
Pretty much it was like a bar of trauma, or it's a concussion. Like when you're that close to a 500-pound bomb, it's so the concussion of that bomb.
So this was fire coming in from our own people.
Yeah,
to hit the enemy, but you were so close to it that it affected you as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. So it. Long story short, these guys are. I mean, we're going into probably three, four, troops in contact a day with these guys, like mm-hmm. for a 6-day mission. And they're you know, probing us, seeing where our machine guns were and attacking us, trying to knock those out of wherever and to get to that Chinook, the helicopter,
right.
or whatever. So, and we would have it like CCA or CAS check on, which is like just jets or rotor wing, like Apaches or Kiowas check on almost immediately. Within like 5 to 10 minutes, like they're there,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're finding, and we have these grids for them where the enemy's location, like the target tokens and all that stuff. So we get them on station quick, and they drop munitions fast. Like,
right.
it's like, boom, like you see them. Okay. Like, here's my initials, like boom, and drop a bomb.
Right.
So danger close is like obviously a little more safety risk involved, but yeah, I mean, it was a danger close bomb. We dropped 2 danger close bombs. I want to say they were within like 60 meters of me in my position with my two of my other teammates that I was with at the time. And I mean, the concussion was so bad, it like popped my ears and I think it gave me a concussion. Like, didn't knock me out, but it was a like super confusing at the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, anytime your equilibrium.
Yeah,
it's knocked out of place. I mean, you can't even stand up. It's you know, devastating.
Yeah, it was wild. It was.
Plus, it's probably loud, and you know, so much going on.
Yeah. I mean, it's exactly how you kind of imagine with a tick in general. Like everything, it's super going like super fast paced, but then it's like super slowed down at the same time. Everything's amplified. And
would that be technically considered friendly fire?
No, I mean, it's just like a risk, you know, like if it's too close, they won't drop, you know, like if
yeah.
But there's certain times when at this time, well, like that,
you
ground
gotta drop.
Yeah, that ground right. force commander was like, this risk overweighs what we
could
are
possibly
right
happen.
Now.
Yeah.
And, we dropped like 2 bombs in succession of each other. I think one was like a couple hundred meters to left or right, but it was
yeah.
both were danger close. Yeah.
So that did that take you out of the fight at that moment, or were you still in the fight?
No.
And then you kind of later on.
No, because I mean, it jarred me for sure. I could tell something was up at the time, but I was a team leader, a recon team leader, so I didn't. It's not like I got like something blown off or anything like that. So
right.
It's like I have these headaches. Yeah, I'm super tired. Yeah, I'm like I could tell something's off, but it wasn't something that was like a. Like, oh, I need to go see the medic. I'm leaving. On top of
right,
that,
right.
I couldn't have left even if I wanted to. You know, we're on a mountain, so
right.
And we got air infilled there, and we're getting air exfilled out. You know, so or we're walking back. Like, I think it was like 11 clicks,
you know,
or something like that.
It's interesting because it's one of these injuries that, you know, it's when you lose a wrist or an arm or something, it's like, you know, it. I'm sure there's mental effects that go along with that, of course. But, you know, when you have something like this happen, where it's like you don't even you're not even sure if it's related to one another
mm-hmm.
at first. I'm sure like you had to do some digging to figure out like what's giving you headaches, what's making
yeah.
you feel this way.
Well, the military and they did a really good job. Like when after that mission, like after multiple missions, like in Afghanistan, was like when TBI got like really big, I guess, and like where they were. Starting to just understand some of it. I think because I noticed from like my first deployments where I was like blown up multiple times and like no kind of testing was done on me after the fact. This time in Afghanistan, there was a bunch of testing you do like right off the bat. As soon as you come back like into the wire or back on base.
What kind of testing?
It's something as simple like they ask you a bunch of like simple arithmetic questions. They ask you like months. Like what time is it? Who's the president? Like little things like that. And I don't know how they score that thing, but it's like if you fail it, they're like, okay, you had something happen here. We don't know what, but like there's an indicator you had something happen. So they go, and that's just the initial on the spot test, right?
He said Ronald Reagan. I don't know what to do with that.
No. It's like on the spot testing that you do, and like once they have that, then that's when they send you to do like all this neurological. Testing and they can actually pinpoint or approximately pinpoint like what time frame you had a TBI and
really?
How severe it was. Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you find out about yourself when it came?
The same thing. I mean, this is when I returned back from deployment. So,
sure. So am I right in thinking that you didn't even report an injury?
No.
When things happened, it was afterwards you came back to the States and you got through that situation that you were in, obviously, because you're here. But then when you get back to the States, you're starting to feel off.
Yeah. Yeah. So like I said, that initial testing, as soon as like we got back from that mission, which was like a six, like I said, 6 day mission, we got back, they immediately like, okay, you go, like everybody had to go do it, but it's like, go take the MACE test, which is like their, that's that paper test that you do the, like normal people probably going to pass it. I feel like it's like, it's like arithmetic, weird arithmetic questions, months, like saying them backwards,
okay,
like, stuff like that.
I don't know. I think I might fail, but
I felt like a retard when I did it, but they say everybody does. But anyway, but yeah, so I did that, and then that was it. Like I finished my deployment. Like I didn't like return to the States or anything like that. And then once I got back to the States, that's when they did like the MRIs, the CAT scans, the all the testing that goes involved with the neurological testing. It's like all this like, just like I don't know. It's just like all these kind of little timing things, like how quickly can CJ like solve these simple problems. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh my, it's like 4 hours of feeling like a retard because you're like, struggle. And
you're like 3 times 8.
Yeah.
I know this one.
Yeah. I know. I learned this one. But yeah. And so you do that. And then it's just over time, you know, I didn't really notice a huge deal other than them saying, hey, like you had something going on. And over the years since then, that was 2012. My memory has taken like a huge hit to, and I don't know, maybe
short term, long term, both.
Short term for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Like I can remember songs from like I used to, I don't know, from my childhood, but like certain times, my short term memory is horrible. So, and they're still learning a lot about TBI and all that, but that's like my
biggest.
What
does that stand for?
Traumatic brain injury.
Okay.
Yeah, it's essentially like a concussion, like a bad concussion. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's like the biggest thing I noticed, like attention to detail, or attention, like paying attention to people.
Now, did this change the size, shape, or otherwise composition of your brain at all?
No, nothing like that. At least not that was directly linked to that. Like I had some fluid buildup behind my like my left eye, and they said they don't know like if that was possible.
Now, did it go away on its own, or did it have?
No,
to
it's still there.
Oh, really?
They said there's no backup data for them to be like, oh, like he had this when he was born. It could have been like just something you were born with, or it could have been something developed. If it's developing, that typically is like a bad, like it means something serious is happening.
Right.
Like, but you know, I never had any follow up with that. So I don't, you know.
So when you finished your last deployment and you got out of the military, what you said, 12 years you were in or 11 years?
Yeah, 12 years. Yeah.
Did you just retire or did you say, okay, I'm injured, I have to get disability or something, or do they push you out?
So after my third deployment, I actually PCS, like I got med boarded out of the military, but I got hurt on an airborne jump. Like when I went to 82nd, 2013, I was there from 2013 to 2016. I hurt myself in 2013, with a really bad jump where I just like crushed my back, like all kind of stress fractures and spondylolisthesis.
Did something go wrong with your parachute?
No. Ultimately it was just like really bad conditions that we jumped in. Like winds were way out of tolerance and I'm already like a 200-pound dude. So like just a lot of, and you're weighted down with all your kit.
Now, when they drop you out of the plane, when you have the parachute, are you supposed to try to land on your feet or do you tuck and roll?
No. So, I mean, there's multiple parachutes that the military uses, the ones that I was using, for like mass tacks and things like that. And the 82nd are all like, you do what's called like a PLF, which is a parachute landing fall. And it's, you don't land on your feet. Like it's,
yeah.
I mean, people snap their legs all the time. Like
really?
Ankles, legs. Yeah. Break their hip, like nasty, hurt their spine, like all kinds of nasty stuff.
And has anyone ever gotten the message, like, you know, do they tell you don't try to land on your feet?
Yeah, I mean,
okay,
it's a big deal. Yeah.
So they tell you, but still people try to do it anyway.
There's some really like dudes out there that I've seen like on just really good days that they get into a hot pocket and they come down super low and they just kind of like running like and land perfectly. I've never landed like that in my life. Like I land like a sack of bricks, like.
How fast are you going?
I don't know how. I mean, it's painful. I can tell you, it's not enjoyable. When it's like a hard tackle, I'd say is like if I had to equate it to something.
And so you hurt your back doing that. And
yeah,
and that's what actually was the
that was my, yeah, that
sort
was
of
my
straw that broke the camel's back.
Yep.
yep. so to speak.
Yeah, so I mean, as you know, like the back's a big deal or whatever, but like I'm just at the point my legs were getting numb, just to the point where they're telling me I either need a spinal fusion of my L3, L4, or we're gonna just get out of the military.
You're like,
really simple. Yeah. And you know, like I never really had a backup plan. Like I was like military. Like, you know, I was a platoon sergeant. I was doing well for myself in the military. I enjoyed it.
Sure.
And like when that hit me, when they were like, hey, like you either need this surgery or, you know, you need to look at other options. Like maybe, I mean, they said even that I could potentially reclass, but it would be to like a administrative job, you know, like something way less taxing on my body. And I just, I mean, if you knew me,
to you, it was like, that was worse than.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like I would hate it. It would be the equivalent of like somebody like you, like working in a cubicle, you know, yeah. like you would hate it.
I did hate it.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. So I joined the military when I was little. Like my father's in the military, 23 years. I always want to be like my dad. Always be infantry. Always, and he was that stuff and all this stuff. But I always want to follow in his footsteps. So I never had a backup plan. And when that medical retirement, or when that forced medical retirement hit me, and they're like, "Hey, like you need to look at other options," it was a huge wake up call for me.
In what way? Like you, like now I need to figure out a new path in life.
Yeah. I mean, it's essentially, yeah. I mean, it's like something you're working towards for 12 years of your life. And then all of a sudden it's not a viable option anymore.
Right.
Due to health. So, and I could have probably like stayed in, like destroyed my body even more. And I mean, there's certain people in the military that do that, you know, and they're,
cause they don't care. They just want to, they're in all the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're either in too deep or they're like, oh, I just got a couple more years and then retirement. I'd never thought like that. Like my body is like way more important to me than a career that.
Sure.
You know.
That may destroy it. Yeah. Yeah. I should start thinking that way. So what was next for you?
So, you know, there was a good amount of time of like the medical board wasn't like a, like, oh, like you're injured, we can't fix you, get out. It was about 8 months of all this testing and all kinds of appointments to get me set up. You know, so the Army did a great job with, excuse me, but like getting me set up to exit the military once that decision was made. So about 8 months of that, like all these kinds of appointments from anything from like resume building to health stuff, the VA stuff, to making sure all my VA related, like my claims and all that were straight. And so I get paid like as soon as I got out, as opposed to, you know, 6 months or a year or never by the VA. So all that stuff was taken or done. So I had a huge amount of time or a good amount of time to kind of wrap my head around medical retirement and like moving on, you know.
Now, from what I understand, that if you get medically retired by the military, they give you the option where you have like a GI Bill or something where you can go to school.
Yeah. So everybody, I mean, most people that enter the Army or everybody who enters the military, they have the GI Bill, but they serve a certain amount of time. Right.
Okay.
So that's just like,
well, you must've made that time in 12 years.
Yeah. I have that. Yeah. I have the GI Bill. Yeah. Like most people who exit the military, they're able to go to college. So that was always like part of the plan. It's like, okay, this door is closed for me with the military. Now I'm going to go back to school or whatever the case was, but I'm going to use my GI Bill. That was like kind of my primary plan.
Right.
So that option was available to me. I also got medically retired at 100%. So, you know, it's a good amount. I mean, the VA has been great. Honestly, I can't say anything bad about the VA, honestly, as far as my situation. Mm-hmm. You know, funds take some time to get turned on or whatever, but it's not anything undoable. You just have to have a plan in place and follow that plan.
And when was
October 2016 is when I got out of the military.
Okay, so this is still kind of a new thing for you. You know, you're just kind of still fresh out, even though it's 2018. You've only really had about a year or so to kind of get used to being a civilian again.
Oh yeah.
What's that been like?
It's been I've loved it. I don't regret anything, any decision I've made, obviously, but you know, those first couple months for any soldier getting out of the military is going to be hard, like no matter what. But after those first couple months and like your GI Bill gets turned on or your funds get turned on, your disability ratings get turned on or whatever, Once that initial stress period was over, my quality of life drastically improved, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's been a roller coaster from that point on, like, you know, starting from a low point, just slowly all the way up into 2018, where I've had a great year. I've met a lot of great people, supportive people who've helped me get to where I am now.
That's good. And so bringing it around to jiu-jitsu finally. So I'm guessing, you know, Clint.
Yep.
And so Clint was probably the one that suggested it to you.
He was.
But you know, still, you know, there's a lot of reasons why people don't come and train. What, you know, what specifically, was it something that maybe you were looking for at the time, or were you even looking to do something different, or was it just like, I think I'll go try this?
You know, like, it's not something I would openly say, or not openly, but it's not something that I would have probably identified at the time. But like, now that I look back at it, and you're distinctly asking that question, like, when you exit the military, you leave like a certain kind of
brotherhood
life, like, behind. Like, you have a lot of really close friends that you went through a lot of shitty times with. So you have that brotherhood.
Because
that
you bond with them.
Yeah,
through like, the going through tough times with someone is a bonding experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you leave that behind, right? You leave the army has a lot of, I mean, the military in general, like, I'm sure Clint looks like a Marine or anybody else who's in the military, but like, there's a lot of awesome things in the military, and there's a lot of crappy things in the military, like everything, right? But the good stuff that you leave behind is like the adrenaline, kind of the troops and kind of like the firefights and the deployments and all. Like, there's crappy times. When I look back at it, I'm very, like, I'm proud of those moments. I look back at them, mm-hmm. and like I accomplished this or I accomplished that or whatever. And I found myself, when I exited the military, wanting to fill that with something, right? Like,
right.
I didn't know what to fill that void with, but it was just like this huge gap of like missing out.
Yeah, you went from going into like extremely stressful situations and getting through them and coming out on the other end feeling, you know, accomplished, to coming back to, okay, I got to find a job.
Yeah.
You know, so I can imagine that's got to be a certain kind of culture shock.
It was, yeah,
that you deal with. Now, you know, I think I've asked you this before, but have you felt some of that camaraderie, some of that brotherhood come back, you know, doing jiu-jitsu? Is that something that you've felt, and is that why? Because just to let everyone know, like, you're a crazy savage student. Like, you're new. You've only been with me a couple, maybe 3 months.
3 months, yeah.
And yet you are literally the most, like, attended person. Like, you're there every day. Most of the time you're there twice a day.
Yeah.
And so you've improved quite a bit, and but it seems like it's a drug for you. And I'd like to know, you know, what is it that this jiu-jitsu drug is feeding for you? Like, what's it feeding?
You know, it's I think starting from the beginning, right? Like, Clint brought me in, really good buddy of mine. Like, he's probably one of my best friends now. Me and him immediately, he was like a Marine infantry dude. All jokes aside, like, those guys are doing their thing just like we did or whatever.
And infighting between branches.
Yeah. And he talks a lot of crap, like, you know, like, I'm not like a bigger dude. Like, he's like a jiu-jitsu dude, like, in a blue belt and all this stuff. So we joked around, like, we went to scuba instructor together, and we joked about, he's going to tap me out like eight times, blah, 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 which he pretty much does. But anyway, yeah, so like, he got me into it, right? So that was kind of like, That pulling me into it, I guess, was that trigger. Once I got there.
Yeah, I'm going to tap you out a bunch.
Like,
no, you're not.
Yeah, like,
you're
no,
like,
you're not.
I'm in.
Like, I'm bigger than you. I'm stronger than you. I'm going to beat you up. But no. I mean, but that was not the case, obviously. But
So what was that like then? So because you are a big guy, like, yeah. for people who you know, can't see your whole body, like, what do you weigh in?
I'm at 200 right now.
Yeah, so he's 200 at 5'9", but you know, you guys could see this guy. He's all muscle, you know. So what was that like for you, rolling with Clint for the first time? And he's probably tapping you out a bunch of times because you're new. You don't know jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, making all kinds of dumb mistakes,
And what was that like for you? Were you like, oh, shit? Like,
you know, like, it was just something I mentally prepared. I mean, I was definitely like, you know, all joking aside, like, you know, all testosterone aside, like, I was prepared to get tapped out. Like, I knew I was going to get into somebody else's, like
to their world,
to their world, you know, like where I know very little about anything other than like a half-assed guillotine choke from the military. And so I knew, like, I mentally I was prepared to, like, you know, I came in, and I think that's like a big part of, like, it's very intimidating when you come in as, like, you come to Sonny's gym and, like, you know, you're coming in, like, all these dudes can essentially have been training longer than you. Maybe not manhandle you, but they can essentially hurt you or choke you or whatever.
Someone like Dom is a great example. Yeah. You know, Dom is 140 pounds, and although we like to give him shit because he's Dom, he's a dangerous man.
He is, yeah, absolutely.
You know, he's a 140-pound little stick figure, and he'll choke your ass,
yeah,
man.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's funny because he's the guy that when I get a big muscly guy coming to the gym who thinks he's a badass, not even someone like a big bigger than you, like, I'll just, all right, go roll with that guy over there, that little guy. Mm-hmm. And they think, oh, I got this. I'm going to smash him.
Yeah, I mean, Dom is definitely one of those dudes that you see and is like, he's just, you would never expect it.
You would think, and he'll fall
you
over.
Would never expect
you know, you would just never expect it. Yeah. He's you know, and that's a great thing to have, is to be,
is,
to look like that,
right.
To be dangerous.
That just proves, you know, that the Dom isn't like he's a tiny dude, but he's like not fat or anything. He's like an in-shape dude, you know? And he obviously has the,
And he is oddly strong for someone that small. Like, I don't know where it's got to be retard strength. That's the only thing I can think of. There's nothing else it can be attributed to, you know?
But so that part definitely got me into it, and it was intimidating, but like mentally I was prepared to be intimidated a little bit, like whatever, mm-hmm. I was prepared to be uncomfortable.
But you've been through that because you've been through the military, and what could be more uncomfortable than war?
Yeah. I mean, it's odd. I don't know. It's just like, I mean, probably the first deployment, my first mission, like, that's kind of how I felt, like, super nervous, super, mm-hmm. but I had Clint, like, he's like, dad, and I'm like, oh, like, you know, he's like, being cool with me, so it wasn't like I was walking into everybody. But what I was saying about your gym, and I told you this already, but, like, one of the things that immediately drew me to your gym was, like, yeah, I came in with Clint, but I was, like, a new dude, but you immediately, like, it made me feel like part of, like, the group, like, immediately.
Was it my profanity-laced tirades?
It was a good amount of profanity, I'd say, that made me feel at home from the military. But, you know, we went out, like, everybody went to lunch. It was, like, a group of us that went out. I don't know if you remember. We all went to lunch to that place that's right down the street or whatever. And
Peaches?
Yeah, I think it was, like, it's, like, a barbecue, like, grill
place. Oh, Basil's.
Basil's.
Yeah.
So we went there, and from that point, I was like, wow, these dudes are all, like, bros, you know, like, they can all choke me, but they're all bros, you know, so that was, like, a big thing, like, where I'd probably say that camaraderie came in.
Yeah.
And that.
We just don't wear Axe body spray, but we are bros.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So that part definitely was there, as far as that goes, and the physical fitness part of it, obviously, I'd say that's, like, now, like, you're calling it.
Well, fun way to get physically fit. I mean, I don't care. People can lie all they want and say they like running on a treadmill. Nobody likes running on a treadmill. You're a gerbil.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So this is a great way to work your core and work your cardio.
Yeah.
And not even know you're doing it because you're worried about getting choked. You know?
Yeah, it's and you're improving yourself, like, you know, when you're doing it, which is, you're learning a skill. Like, on cardio, like you're saying, you're a gerbil. You're just, like, running on a belt, you know, you're thinking about how much this sucks. And jiu-jitsu, you're thinking about trying to be two steps ahead of that person or whatever, however many steps ahead of that person to get a dominant position or a submission or whatever. So
now, are you looking potentially at jiu-jitsu as a way of sort of changing your life, maybe going in the direction and doing something? Because, you know, there's a lot of ways that one can make a living, you know, in any niche community. I mean, you could become a black belt and a gym owner one day. Mm-hmm. You could start a clothing company. You could start some kind of veterans. You know, there's a company called, I think it's called Combat Flip Flops or something like that.
Yeah,
it's all veterans. And, you know, so have you thought about, you know, maybe like doing something like that, or like, what is your focus?
You know, I don't know. I mean, jiu-jitsu is something that's just extremely fulfilling to me, to every day get your ass kicked and every day come across like learning something. And like, I tell people all the time, like every time I like leave the gym, whether it's you, whether another, like some blue belt, a white belt, like I always learn something no matter what, like I always learn something there.
Of course.
And my mind's blown every day. Like, it's like, boom, like learn three different things. I'm gonna remember one of them, but like, it's cool as shit, you know?
Yeah.
And that to me is like so like addicting. Like, it's like, and like you're saying, like you when you are able, like I'm at a very, I'm very lucky to be able to come as much as I do, I think, you know, just because my situation and,
it gets you out of the house. It gets you, you know, get your mind off things. And because that's one of the things I like about jiu-jitsu is that no matter what your problems are, when you're on the mat and you're in the middle of a roll, you can't be thinking about that stuff.
Yeah.
Like it all goes out of your mind. And the only thing you're thinking about is what is the next move?
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah. Like that's a, like, I'm a very, like, I don't know if other people like this or, but you know, everybody gets down or whatever. Like everybody has like lulls in their life or, you know, jiu-jitsu has changed that for me because it's like daily for me. Like, and if I don't hit it, like even today, like this morning, I didn't come and it's like, I wanted to go because like my body needs rest and it's
sure. You have to listen to your body.
Yeah. And, that kind of commitment to, I mean, it's just so in a weird way, like the physical fitness, the commitment, the brotherhood, the, you know, the challenge, it's all like, so it's so different from the military and it's so interlaced at the same time. Like when you think about what it brings back to you, you know?
Now, there was a question that I asked you after you competed, and, you know, it was, to me, it was like a ridiculous question, but your answer surprised the hell out of me.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you again, because it's an interesting thing, because, you know, I think of myself when it comes to, like, the military, I didn't even have the balls to sign up, you know what I mean? Like, as soon as someone told me that you were going to have to get into a gas tank and, like, they were going to spray you with CS gas and take off your mask and breathe it in, I was like, yeah, that's what they do? Like, I'm not doing that,
no,
you know? Like, that's all I heard. That's all I needed to know about the military to know that I wasn't joining.
Yeah.
So I was a total pussy. I didn't join. So for me to even ask this question is like, so out of line. But I did ask you, what was it like when you were in these firefights where your heart was pumping and you know, you had all this adrenaline going? What was the comparison to that when you competed? And yeah, I think you said to me that competing was worse. And yeah. I was shocked by that answer.
It is. It's weird. I mean, it's just so much. There was so much unknown with my first competition. There was so much unknown that it's like, even though I have all these people, like, I have Sonny, I have Werther, I have the Clint, I have like all these people that have like either competed or done jiu-jitsu for way longer than me, and they're telling me this is how it's going to be, this is what to expect, this is what to do, this is what not to do. I have all these, like, you know, this intel or, you know, these guys tell me how it's going to be, what, you know.
I love that you just called it intel. Yeah, that is the best.
And so, you know, it's kind of like, it got me mentally prepared, but it was like, you know, the nerves were 100% still there. And I think just the military at some point, the military is like all reaction. Like you're trained to the point where, and jiu-jitsu is the same way, but I'm not at that level yet, right? Like, but as long as I'm in the military, everything is reactive. Like, so like you're
right. Like all of a sudden, like a bomb falls or like a bullet goes by and it's like, oh shit, activated.
Yep.
And then you don't even have time to think about it. So you're just in the fight.
Yep.
Whereas when you have a tournament coming up, oh, for me, it's the worst. Like the month leading up to the tournament is the worst.
Yeah.
The actual day of the fight, I'm fine. My nerves are fine. I'm totally fine.
See, that's kind of the opposite. Like, I don't know. It was weird. Like, I felt really good. Like,
leading
up to it,
but then the day of.
I was like, same BS. Like, you know, like, Sonny's blowing my head up. Like, Clint's blowing my head up. Like, I'm going to be all right. I'll be good. And,
but you did well, though. You
got
first and second.
Yeah.
You know, you got first place in a two-man division.
Yep.
Which means you won a match. And then you got second place in, like, a four-man division or something, right?
I got first in my weight class, and then second, they bumped me into the next weight class up because some guy, I guess, like, didn't have anybody competing against, so they decided I was the unlucky guy. But, yeah, so I had to go against him on my third match. I had two matches in my weight division, and third was the next weight class up.
So you won your first – so this is great, by the way. Like, when I did my first tournament, I lost all my matches. Of course, I was a morbidly obese white belt, but that's another story. You did your first tournament, and you got two medals. You got a first and a second place.
Yeah.
So that must have felt good.
Yeah, I mean, the medals were awesome. I went in there. What calmed me down a lot was I went in there to just look at it as a learning experience. Well, I wanted to win, of course. Like, everybody wants to win.
Sure.
But I went into it wanting to learn something. And even though I beat the two dudes in my division, like, I wanted submissions. Like, I didn't want to win by points. I wanted submissions. I got those submissions.
That's a good thought process.
Yeah. And then the, like, you, I mean, we've talked about this in detail a little bit more, but like on that next weight class up, you know, I wasn't the bigger dude anymore. I was the smaller guy in the division. And
these are the lessons that I was telling you, like where, you know, I learned an important one at Purple Belt when I had a match at Naga, and I thought that I was going to be the biggest guy in my division. And when I got there and realized the only guy that I was fighting towered over me.
Yeah.
And you know, that's always a humbling experience. And
it was very humbling. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's plenty of people that can manhandle me all the, like, and I can't get out of them or whatever, but they're way higher belts than me, or like a purple belt, or, you know, a really high level blue belt or black belt like you or whatever. And it's like, oh, I can't get out of this. I don't, you know, whatever.
Right.
But the, I mean, the guy essentially controlled me. And I was just so gassed. And I think the way you put it was like, I went back to, like, I don't have a lot of technique. Like, I do have some technique, like, it's learning. I'm growing, obviously, I'm learning, but I resulted to what I do, you know, which is like
your gross motor skills.
Get this dude off,
right? Which is like push and because, you know, I know that you know not to do those things, mm-hmm. but you know, you did them, but and it's fine. It is what it is. I mean, this is why we do it. This is why we compete, because we learn to get the bugs out. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the more you do it, I mean, everyone asks, like, how do you get past nerves competing? And the real answer that nobody wants to hear is you got to compete more.
Yeah.
You know, Werther probably doesn't get nervous at all because he competes every weekend, you know?
And he's a computer or a machine.
Exactly. He's stripped of emotion. He doesn't have emotion.
Yeah.
He's a computer. That's true. I really thought that was an interesting, you know, mm-hmm. Thing to see, you know, because here's a guy who's been to war. He's been like, had people shooting at him. And he's nervous about a jiu-jitsu tournament where, like, the worst thing that's going to happen is he's going to have to, like, tap.
Yeah, but it's like a test, you know. Like, it's a real test. Like, you can roll all day. Like, I can go to Sunny's every day at gym and roll and, like, you know, no, it's not a big deal if you're tapped or you tap something out or whatever.
Right.
But there is, like, you're now competing. Like,
yeah. You feel it feels a little bit more real because, A, there's people watching and it's – you know, it's a test.
Mm-hmm.
It's a test of sorts. It's a quiz, we'll say.
Exactly. So and then it's like, did I prepare enough for this quiz? Am I prepared enough for this quiz?
Right.
Or am I going to get embarrassed and get this F, you know, and get choked out by like some crazy.
I mean, hey, listen, it happens to everyone. Like, no, I don't know anybody who's never been submitted.
Sure. Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, it happens. Let me ask you this: How has jiu-jitsu, if at all, helped you in a mental capacity? You know, dealing with, you know, just all these issues that you talked about with getting out of the military and.
It's a huge outlet for everything that we've kind of spoke about with, like, any veteran I've ever talked to complains about the same things lacking, even to the point where some people are like, I'm going back in the military. Even though some of these guys are the same ones that are saying, I can't stay in the military, I hate it. Like, and they just get out on their own, they want to go to college. They get out and they're missing that, all the things we had spoke about earlier, with the camaraderie, mm-hmm. the physical fitness, the challenge, whatever you want to call it. And jiu-jitsu has essentially filled that for me in a lot of ways, I think, where I'm not the strongest dude on the mat. I'm not the fastest dude on the mat. I'm not the most technical dude on the mat. It's a challenge. It's a huge challenge.
And I guess I would have to imagine that feeling like you're part of something again, mm-hmm. is, you know, because we're a team. Like, that's what we try to make it feel that way anyway. We try to make it feel like we're a team, a family.
Yeah.
You know, and there is something to be said about going through struggle. And the struggle in our case, of course, is just the training. It's the, you know, the hard rounds that you have, and getting through it with each other. And, you know, and when you have a bad day on the mat, you feel like shit. When you have a great day on the mat, you feel great.
Yep.
And, it sort of brings it all back, I think, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's just like we were talking about earlier, but, you know, it's extremely intimidating to come into the gym and then to notice like the black belt in charge, the head instructor, like you, is like so chill and so attentive to that new dude, that brand new dude, like, you know, and he's just like, you're immediately like felt like a friend and like somebody that I can like ask legitimate questions to, and like you didn't explain.
I've turned some people off though. I mean, I had a guy come in, and this is a true story. I had a guy come in, and the first thing he did when he came in was he handed me a poem.
Yeah, I was here that morning.
You were there that morning, yeah. So a man walked in, and he handed me a poem, and it was a poem about the football players not standing for the national anthem. And the whole poem was about how he spilled blood for the country, and he wore the uniform and this and that. And the guy, he told me when he handed me the poem that he had written the poem.
Yep.
And, you know, it's not every day that a grown man hands you a poem and says, read my poem. Mm-hmm. So I read his poem. I mean, I'm not a monster. So I decided I read his poem, and I was like, okay, that was interesting. That was, you know, I understand you're very passionate about this issue. Perhaps you're a veteran, and you know, you spilled blood for the country, and you think it's, you know, you're mad because they kneel. Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
I don't know why you would bring that to a jiu-jitsu instructor and hand it to him.
First time meeting him,
checking out the gym. So the guy watches one of the class, doesn't participate, just watches one of the classes. And afterwards, I think it was about 3/4 of the way through, and I don't know, I just felt like it was time to talk to the guy. So I went over and, you know, I had a little chat with him, you know, what do you think and stuff like that. And he like kind of laid into me a little bit about my cursing.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not really a big fan of the cursing. Maybe I could get used to that, but I'm like, all right, I get that, you know, it's different strokes for different folks, you know.
Sure.
He was asking me about the prices, and I said, are you a veteran? You know, because of the poem. And because we have a big discount for veterans and for police and first responders. So I asked him, are you a veteran? He's like, oh, no, I've never served.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, this guy just handed me a poem. And in the poem, he talks about donning the uniform and shedding blood and making the ultimate sacrifice so you should stand for the national anthem.
Yeah.
You're not even a veteran.
No. Yeah, that's crazy.
I was flabbergasted, to say the least, because I've had some strange interactions with people. But that one was particularly odd.
That's super odd, yeah. I mean, I was there that morning.
And he was upset at my swearing, at my cursing, and I'm like, but that makes sense now because he's never been in the military. Because if you've been in the military, you don't give a fuck if someone swears.
You don't, yeah, you don't really.
Fuck is the vocab. Yeah, it's like they probably use fuck for every different type of, you know.
It's in every sentence, no matter
yeah,
what.
Yeah,
like, you don't even notice you use it anymore.
It's a verb. It's a noun. It's a pronoun. It's everything. You know.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, he's an odd character for sure.
That was an interesting experience.
He's 100% a serial killer or something.
Yeah. So that's good. So you would recommend jiu-jitsu then to veterans as a
Oh yeah. I mean, I think that everybody has like a, you know, like I never did jiu-jitsu before. Like it was never like I enjoy like competitiveness. That's the only thing competition. I would say like I like competing with other people. Like
you have a competition.
Yeah, that drive me or whatever. Yeah. So I never did jiu-jitsu before that. So it's like a huge thing to take on, right? Like I could have done, like I'm a big scuba diver, I'm a scuba instructor.
Mm-hmm.
That was like a challenge at some point.
Yeah, but you don't want to do that because then you're gonna like fight with an octopus or something.
Yeah,
like,
I mean they're sharks.
There's shit under the ocean. Yeah. You just like, dude, I saw a video the other day of a dolphin that had an octopus in his mouth and he like
slapped
flung
somebody.
It out and slapped a dude in a kayak in the face.
Dolphins are brutal.
Like an octopus arm.
Yeah.
You know?
Dolphins are brutal.
Just slapping you in the face. It's like, dude, there's things under there that will maul you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Like, I love you, Clint, but you're a crazy man going under that water that deep. That's crazy.
He's really good at deep. He's a baby. No, but so back to jiu-jitsu, right? So the point I was trying to make was like I'd never done jiu-jitsu before, and it was literally just like Clint pretty much badgering me to say he's gonna choke me out. I was like, no, you're not gonna choke me out. Like,
all right, so he had to basically bully you into
a little bit. Yeah, I mean, it was like somebody calling me out, you know. And as soon as I went into it, it's like this heat. I mean, it's like it's a drug.
It was
is a good
rush.
Way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you didn't have, you probably just didn't realize, like, oh wow, I didn't even realize that your body could do these things.
Yeah, I mean, I think like a week or two ago, you were talking like, I don't even know what happened to, you know, you were just like, I needed that. You said something like in passing or to yourself or under your breath, or maybe the guy you rolled with, like, I needed this roll, I already need a tough roll or a hard roll or something like and you just rolled harder, particularly harder that night, you know, whereas like a probably like more therapeutic than anything.
Yeah, that's or I remember that. I was in a bad mood and I wanted to get rid of my bad mood. So I went balls in when I rolled. I just rolled. And it's funny because you don't roll as well when you do that. When you're angry and you're just getting out frustration in a roll, you're going to get tapped out.
Yeah.
Because you're not even really, you're just angry and you're just, you're not thinking. And I knew that was going to happen and I was fine with it because I was accomplishing a specific goal, which was get out my anger and feel better after. And it worked.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it worked like a charm. I felt great after.
It's hard to put into words, but like once you're asked, like there's so much that jiu-jitsu and that niche has like given me now that it's like I'm addicted to it. For one, like I'm addicted to it. It's just like you're bettering yourself every day. Even if it's like, oh, I got tapped out 3 times, but I didn't make the same mistake I made yesterday, you know?
Right. Right.
So like I learned that one little thing of like getting my shoulder to the ground or whatever, like that you learned. And
it's amazing because it's like, and this, it's funny because like I was saying to you, you know, it's funny. I said to CJ one day, I said, you know, you're in danger of quitting. And the reason why is because, like I said, you're learning at such an exponential rate right now.
Yeah.
Like this is still your learning curve is like this. And pretty soon it's going to taper off and it's going to be still an upward curve. But, and this is just the truth of jiu-jitsu. This is how it works. Like when you're new, you're like a sponge. You take everything in. But then there's a ceiling on that. And then but one thing that never stops happening is the more that you get out there and train with different people and learn from different people is you'll learn and, you know, you can learn a new detail to a move. It's like Rob Kahn was talking about Horion Gracie. Horion Gracie is the father of, he's Hoist's brother and he's the father of like Hieron and Henner. I believe he's their father. I don't have my Gracie like family tree.
Memorized.
But I do remember what one thing that Rob Kahn said about Horion Gracie. He said that there's two things that are guaranteed if you take a lesson from Horion Gracie. Number one is that he's going to teach you something that you already know, right? Mm-hmm. Like an Americana. And the number two thing is that you're going to come away from that move with a completely new and different understanding of it that will blow you away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that that can happen even after you're a black belt, and it has happened, mm-hmm. you know, guys will show you something and you're like, why didn't someone show me that when I was a purple belt or a white belt or something, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh my, it's a mind blower, you know? It's like, holy shit. I didn't even know you could do that.
I notice that often with some of the guys in the gym or like you or, you know, the higher belts, like they've been in the game a lot longer than me. And it's like you're saying that like they'll be shown some weird move and it's like, oh, that's really cool. I never did it that way.
So we still get excited about it too. Cool. I mean, I've been training 11 years. I still get excited about jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
I still get excited about training. You know, there's just a lot more bullshit that goes with it when you're 45 and you have a broken body. But I guess that's all the kind of questions I had for you. Let me see if there's any. Poor Werther. What's Werther talking about? I haven't even looked at the comments. I challenged him because he's a ginger. That's what Clint just said. I love that the saga continues. You better be careful, Clint, because he's bigger than you and he's learning quick.
That is my boy.
He's a good dude. Oh, everybody, dude. Clint is a lovable person. You can't meet Clint and not love him.
Yeah.
Unless you're on the wrong side of Clint.
I met him like when I first met him, like I was like we went on a scuba trucker together and like when I first like noticed him, I was like, great, this guy looks like a tool. I don't know how he's just like really friendly dude to me, like grew on me and like he's a bro, like he's Clint, you know, so it's like, but he's probably thinking the same thing about me, I don't know.
That's hilarious.
But even then I was like sizing him up, I was like, oh, this dude has cauliflower ears.
Well, it's funny because, you know, the thing was Jordan Peterson says that every time you meet another man, there's always this underlying threat of violence, you know.
Yeah, it's like you size up, like, situation like or whatever.
It's like, you know, that old saying, it's like, you know, be nice and polite and humble, but have a plan to kill everyone in the room.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just the guy code, man.
Yeah,
you have to be like that.
Yeah, so I have, like, an unwritten rule in my life that's served me pretty well. And it's not always accurate because people like you or whatever, but like I typically don't fuck with people with cauliflower hair. But yeah,
that's a good rule,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, it's
the worst
the
cauliflower hair, the probably the worst, more badass the guy is.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got some disease like the elephant man or something. But
that's a rule I've lived by. No, but I mean, Clint, me and him, we just immediately, we immediately clicked, and we were already getting thrown a lot of homework and stuff like that. But he's a great dude.
Yeah, he is. Well, on that note, I want to say thank you. This has been a great conversation for me. I've learned a lot, and I hope that veterans can watch this and, maybe think about trying jiu-jitsu wherever they live, because it really is something that will give them back that, like you said, that sort of thing that they're missing.
Yeah,
leave, you know?
Yeah, so. The last thing I would want to leave on that, with the caveat that is, like I said, like I came into jiu-jitsu not knowing anything. I still don't know anything. But it's a huge challenge, and it's very, like, you don't have, like, it's just, you have to, there's no right time, you know? It's like multiple people, like, I'm sure in your years, like, how many people you've had come in from one class or whatever, and they're just never see them again. But if you stick with it and you continue just to push in whatever niche you decide to push yourself in, I think, it's very beneficial to a veteran, 100%. Like, to fill that gap, something like jiu-jitsu is extremely beneficial.
Good. Awesome, man. Well, thank you, man.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate the time.
All righty. Bye, everybody.